Hello, everyone. Welcome on back to the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vince Morgado. Joining me, my co-host, Mr. Jeff Wilder.
Asteroids do not concern me, Admiral.
And Mr. Drew Bishop.
Good one.
That was actually pretty good. Very well done.
Oh, thank you.
So we are all recording this just a few hours after the final of Gen Con, and it was quite a final for those who watched it. Congratulations to the overall champion, Carson Rae, with Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Rico Lee, Fabulous He, Ali Ababa. And big ups to Matt Carey with what was easily the surprise list of the tournament, Jenden, two Inquisitors, and the Grand Inquisitor. Is it? Okay, let me just head this off right now. I still don't think taps are any good. Does anyone disagree with me?
Well, I was going to say, have we ever actually seen Inquisitors do their job and actually successfully hunt down and kill Jedi?
No.
Exactly. I mean, hey! I'm scared. But hold on, that list is pretty nasty though, right? With the free locks. And then they evade coming in with the Force, so they're evade focused, right? Like,
yeah, and Matt could not roll two blanks at all. He just refused to. It was incredible.
And concussion missiles is what made that list work, because otherwise, you know, you're looking at two dice ships, but with concussion mm-hmm. missiles, you're looking at three dice ships, and maybe with a little extra splash bonus, which is, you know,
exactly.
The interesting thing is that Matt beat the exact, or very nearly the exact list Carson beat him with. Matt beat him in the round before, I believe.
The round of the semifinal, yeah.
So he knew how to beat the list. It's just when I started watching that final, from what I understand, that was the turning point, because Carson just started rolling habanero. And like I'm watching him, and it's like three hits, two hits and a crit, a hit and two crits, and Matt's ships just started popping. Just I'm gone.
Including the most disastrous possible, the most disastrous thing in the whole game, which was a tie on, you know, half health, flying over a rock, pulling the crit and pulling the direct, and just, you know, gone. Next.
Very Star Wars.
Was that as Star Wars themed as the triple or the double blank into the triple blank into the hit crit to kill Soontir?
So there was another moment in this event that was that I think probably would equal the Legend of Mitchell Hurst, coming courtesy of, let me make sure I have the gentleman's name right, Mr. Todd Grubbs, against a friend of the show, Tyler Tippett. Let me be perfectly clear. There were a lot of people complaining about Todd and Tyler's game being slow play. That was not. That was just two guys who were predicting each other extremely well and very good dice from both sides until the moment where it came down to it. And Jeff, you already had your moment of comeuppance when listening to the old episode where it's like, Heroic's not going to proc on offense that often. And Poe rolls four blanks and re-rolls into three hits. And poor Fel just blanks out the roll.
Yep.
And just vaporizes for the loss. And it was kind of like the last turn, there was no time left. This was, he had arc dodged Vader to get away from probably giving up half on Poe and losing, and just incinerated Fel one-on-one.
For what it's worth, the outcome was, well, losing Fel was not expected, but all he had to do was do 1 point to Fel to lose that match because it was so close. It was 19-12. Fel had taken one damage. So if he half points Fel, he wins the match. So the outcome of winning the game was not unexpected. I would ballpark the outcome as about 70%. But again, it's like that quick draw across the rock shot on Wedge a couple of months back. It's the way it happened that was
exactly
just spectacular.
Right.
But and Todd Grubbs, by the way, is running a fantastic resistance list that I thought had legs to go further into the event. Poe Dameron with Heroic R4 integrated in Black 1, Lula with Crackshot, Talisson with Crackshot, and Greer Sunil with Heroic and Advanced Optics. It's, you know, very maneuverable. Everybody's technically a double action, and it's, you know, reasonably high pilot skill across the board.
I like the list a lot. I would replace Greer with Zari myself, but I'd be like that last.
Would you? So the list that I've been dabbling with is Poe, Lulo, and then one of the blues, the blue A-wings, and it's not Kova. It's a Noden on the transport, like a souped-up Noden with like R4, Korra, and Auto Blaster for the coordinate. I don't know if that particular transport was strong, but I was trying to like fit it into the four-ship resistance. Although I think Farmer's list is probably the best variant of it as of right now. But what do you guys think of losing one of the A-wings for a transport? Is it worth it if it doesn't have Leia?
I mean, Covenel on the transport's really strong. I'm not sure about the other one. Is that you can do stuff if you're double stress, right?
It's if they are coordinated to or they use the coordinate action, they can take an action themselves.
Oh, okay. I mean,
yeah. So the thing is like,
so it's resistance psi is what I'm hearing.
A little bit, yeah. At the cost of stress, right? So
yeah.
Noden would wind up with two stress, but Kor says when you do blue, you remove all your stress.
And that's so, what R4 is for.
Yep, exactly, exactly. Many,
what's that come to points for?
I think it was at 200. I made it 200 because I was like, I want to try an auto blaster, right?
That ship in particular.
Oh, let me pull it up here just a second. Yeah, but so I went to a tournament over the weekend, and I lost to a core. Is it core or Korra? Oh man, I'm so new to this game. Don't hurt me, guys. Noden is 36 base, and Kova was the one. I lost to Kova, and the Kova Leia is not bad at all. It's expensive, yeah. But dang man, it's so there's. Yeah, I mean, you could sit there forever. You know,
pretty good.
Right, right.
I mean, the thing about the transport is if you're replacing an A-wing with it, you're not losing a whole lot in direct offense. You might be losing a little bit in time on target, but you should be making that up with just if you're not shooting at stuff, you're coordinating stuff and giving them better. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like it should work in theory to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still kind of at a loss what to do exactly with the transport because for me it feels a lot like it's a Y-wing that might be a little bit better at offense and has a support capacity, but it's a dare to spend more points on it than you're supposed to.
Yep, no, 100%. It's like begging.
You want a Christmas tree this thing. Like you want to put the spinning rims and, you know, the TVs in the seats and the extra subwoofer in the back. But as soon as you do, you're pulling, you know, far more effective upgrades away from the rest of your list, if not more effective pilots. So that's why I need to stay away from the transport because my dumbass will put everything but, you know, a carbon fiber hood on it.
I feel like my list has done that. Sorry, Jeff.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that was it. I was just I was looking at it and in my list with Lulo the Blue, Ho and Noden, that's kind of what it was at the end of the day. I was looking at it, I'm like, dang man, Ho and Noden are like half my list, right? Like,
yeah. And I mean when Ho is half your list or when Ho is a third of your list, that's fine. It's Ho. You know, that's a lot of times what ends up happening. But when a one evade eight hull not terribly maneuverable ship is the other, you know, 40-50 points. You can lose that real quick against concentrated dice, and then you're playing a third of a list down. You know what I mean?
Yep, 100%.
I got to be honest. If I'm playing resistance competitively now, I think my starting ship is Finn in the pod with Heroic. 30 points.
100%.
And Rose Tico is not far behind either.
Well, I mean, I guess, but Finn with Heroic, the way that people are playing it now, whether that stands up to when it gets backed or not is the question, but the Finn with Heroic right now is the best 30 points you could spend. Just absolutely no question. In the game.
Yeah.
In the game.
Right. Very similar to Olier with the Republic, right? Like, just for bang for buck, what you get is just awesome.
It really is.
Yeah, and I mean, that's despite the fact that literally an errant proton torpedo from anyone can just delete this thing off the face of the earth.
Highly unlikely. I mean,
but it does it to most things, right? Like full modded proton torpedo will kill most of a ship.
Yeah,
an average ship, right?
Here's the problem. I'll just put it this way. If Finn is defending against like a wedge proton and he doesn't have a focus for whatever reason and he rolls a focus, he's just dead. You just pick it up.
Makes sense.
I mean,
there was a wedge Falcon in the cut too.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever ran into Todd though, but that I have never seen anybody fly that cagey with wedge and have it pay off.
Well, I mean, he did turn into Han in that one game, right? Or at least, no, yeah, he did. And then Han just booked it, right? The hard three boost, and he was gone.
Yeah, I mean, there was one absolute brown pants turn where Wedge flew right in front of all three Torrents and yep. Sinker and tanked it and took four damage when he should have just exploded. Everyone watching that game saw that four straight right in front of Sinker and went, game, it's over,
yeah.
It's over. And then he just wouldn't stop rolling greens. Like, evade, he wouldn't stop rolling, was one evade, one evade, one evade, one evade. And because everything was stressed, it was all one day, it was all like one or two damage, and he survived.
Right, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anyone sell their soul to the devil on stream, but that was the moment. Right, and Wedge survived, and it was just like, oh my gosh!
And let me fly away and regen, and then regen up to half, above half, with 26 seconds left.
Right, so secretly that Gold Squadron didn't catch it, and then win the match.
They didn't, yeah. I was watching.
It was awesome.
I was watching Dion and the other guy. I forget whose name it was. Well, it wasn't Ken. It was somebody else. And somebody goes, and they go, what? He won? It was fantastic. I mean, if that doesn't show you that regen is just like so underhanded that even people casting games can't keep track of it, I don't know what does.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. It is something to look at. Is that something we should talk about? Because Carson's list, all three of them. No, that's right.
Two of the three had
heal bots on him. And I know that he used it effectively with Rick, like, in at least two different games. That's, you know, I don't know. It was weird how R2 from first edition, you know, a lot of people were like, is this right? Like, should this be a thing? And even though there are now, you know, constrictions around healing, is it still too cheap?
I mean, you got to look you can't just look at it as two shield upgrades. That's simplistic, right? That's whatever. What would that be?
Yeah,
that would
right.
be 12 points on a 7B. I mean, officially it would be 16 points, but it's
16
realistically or fair wise, it would be 12 points on a 7B. The fact it is 6 points, right? On Anakin, at least.
Yes.
It's agility-based.
Yep.
Is that right? R2's agility-based? I think that's correct.
I want to say yes, but also...
I believe so.
It's four points on Rick, isn't it?
But Rick is a base to agility.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's base. It's base.
Yeah,
that's right. That's why it's more expensive.
You're paying half what you would pay for two shield upgrades, but you do have to take a disarm token and the opportunity cost of the droid. So if it's too cheap, it's not by too much.
Okay. I think probably what's going on is it's another one of those perfect combination things where you're combining regen with a ridiculous dial at very high initiative with double reposition. It's not dissimilar to Juke on the Sigmas, where it's just like this confluence of upgrades and abilities comes together to form something that might be a little bit unfair.
Right.
I don't think there's more to do with the upgrade, because it wouldn't be right to punish ships that can't do that by increasing the points on them. Probably what's going to have to happen is they're just going to put the points on Jedi like Obi-Wan back up.
I mean, and I think they should. I think Force is just too cheap, valued too low right now in the point cost.
Kenobi and Plo being approximately priced is not good, because Kenobi's ability is way more useful, and he's got more Force. Like, Kenobi's ability is almost a rebel level of interior synergy.
I mean, just if not more so. It is Force limited, so he can do that. You can do that once or twice. It's not like he can do it an unlimited number of times.
Of course, right. But I mean, it's just, you know, on the turns it matters, or in the moment, the ability to do it when it matters. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, like you said, it's the opportunity cost. More often than not, somebody else is going to get more out of that focus, or Obi-Wan will get more out of that focus than he will out of the Force to regen it.
With calibrated laser targeting,
yeah, we saw
will.
That. So,
yeah,
that's also, yeah, that was also really. I wanted to talk to you guys about that too.
CLT was just way too expensive originally, and now that it's down, you know, so now that it's been cut in half in points, it's usable, and it doesn't turn the guy you put it on into, you know, way overpriced.
They seem to have achieved a good balance with CLT and 7B.
I'm wondering, is there another, not that there's like, you know, oh, let's change up the list, but do you see this? Do you see calibrated laser targeting making it into other lists with other Jedi that are not Anakin and Obi-Wan? I know a lot of people have been dabbling with Mace.
We've seen a swarm of Jedi Knights with calibrated laser targeting. 5 Jedi Knights with calibrated laser targeting do fairly well.
That's right.
I have the same problem with that list as I do with 5 A-Wings.
Right, we talked about that, but I'm just wondering if they don't have 3 Force, you know, is the extra focus in Bullseye worth it? Right, I mean, like, how often are we, you know, focusing? Obviously the Deltas like to target lock, right? Especially Anakin with all the Force mods, right? But no, it was just interesting to me to see so much CLT Obi-Wan, especially in some of the lists that we were looking at before Gen Con. And now, of course, seeing that it's one, I'm wondering, is it the Force?
The Force and
that
the
is the reason why it's being taken, right?
And the ability to take 3 Jedi.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, is that you can take 3 Jedi. Or
Rick.
Right. I mean, or you take Anakin Rick, which, like, Jeff and I were talking about it. Even after the points going up both on Anakin and on 7B, he's still probably the best single small ship in the game.
I definitely agree with that. The ability to focus and then boost or barrel roll for free on top of doing the boost or barrel roll for 1 Force. It's 3 actions, right?
Like, you could honestly,
action economy is king.
It's almost scary to think about that. You almost want to put 7B on somebody else and put CLT on Anakin because of how easily he just flies around people.
I still don't know about that, but
I did say almost.
Oh yeah, right. But there's the thing; it's on the table now, though, right? Yeah, like, maybe, that could be a thing.
The thing about it is that even with the double reposition, it's going to be easier for Anakin to get a four die range one shot than a four die CLT shot. If you're 100%. Considering position afterward, because Anakin doesn't really want to be pointed directly at somebody the way that CLT requires.
Right. Or if he does, or if Anakin is, you know, it costs you force, right, to do the K-turn and then remove the stress. And at that point, that extra force, or the extra focus, from CLT, maybe wouldn't matter because you don't have enough mods for it.
7B pretty exclusively. Obi-Wan just falls into that. He's got 3 force. Right. He's got I-5. Like you said, it helps him fit 3 Jedis in. And he's just in that perfect sweet spot where CLT makes sense.
Is anybody surprised by how hard Luminara has fallen off?
Not.
I honestly really am.
For the same reason we've seen Padme kind of go out.
Well, but Padme wasn't really a thing. Luminara was when Jedi dropped. I mean, yeah, everybody was like, oh my god, Anakin's ridiculous, because he is. But Luminara was a close second.
Yeah,
she was the other automatic include.
Luminara was going to be an auto include, ever. She's just too...
Not an auto include, but she's still very good.
She's built for specific types of lists, right? You used to see her with like 3 arcs, right? And I'll be honest with you, man, when you don't have a whole lot of mods and your hits are being turned into focuses and you may or may not have a focus token, right? Those arcs are really hard to pin down. And so I feel like she's a ship. She's got a very decent ability, but it has to do
her
with
ability
the
is,
list, right?
Her ability
has to be built around
defensive
her
and for the most part, unless you can rack up defensiveness to the point where you're nigh unkillable, offense rules X-Wing. Red dice, green dice. And I think that's basically what it is. That's what it's always been. That's why I was never super high on her. I was higher on Stacey 10 than on Luminara, to be honest. I think that Stacey 10, in terms of maneuverability for the ships, is going to do more for a list than Luminara does.
Right. Would you say very nonchalantly that, you know, what is it? Attack dice, right? Arcane top tier.
Yeah.
In second to flight.
I would.
Repositioning.
And they tie together really well because
I feel that too.
Isn't just the defensive thing. Repositioning is an offensive thing. It you get extra red dice a lot.
Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
If you reposition correctly.
Not to drag us back to Gen Con, but I was looking at lists, I wanted to make an observation. In terms of the Swiss finish, we have to go all the way down to 11th before we see a rebel list. We have literally every other faction in the list before we see a rebel list.
No,
and it's your two faves. It's your two faves, Vince.
It's amazing what happened. I'm not doing it.
We all agree, so you don't have to.
I'm not doing it. I that's why I said I don't have to. I don't want to do it. I'm actually over here having some fun trying to put together what I think would be. I mean, if you were to just swap Luminara in for Obi-Wan, how would I feel about the list? And
go for it.
I actually don't hate this.
Interesting,
because it does buy you a shield upgrade on Anakin.
I gotta be honest. I think I would heavily consider spare parts. This is me. I can't believe I'm saying this because shield upgrade gets the odd hit points. But I would heavily consider spare parts before I would consider shield upgrade. Just because of the double use of spare parts and because if you're running R2 anyway and you get the chance, you get the effective shield upgrade anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the other interesting thing with spare parts. I had a lot of talk with Brandon Carey when the CIS and Republic first dropped about Poe dealing with Vader lists that have like a 15 to 17 point bid, right? How do you stop them? And it was interesting to me. Now Poe doesn't, and yeah, of course the points have changed. So there isn't a whole lot of bid. The bids are still, you know, fairly deep, right? Maybe deeper than Poe's. But Anakin, a lot of the times when those initiative sixes have, we know Anakin gives them the initiative, Anakin tends to fly right over them. And, you know, obviously you want the double reposition, but man, wouldn't it be nasty if Vader was going to K-turn and suddenly his past self drops the spare canister parts on him right before he Talon rolls, right? Like,
yeah.
And loses the lock with it. So I want to try it, but I don't know if we're at that point yet, at least for Resistance to try it. But it's certainly – I enjoy dropping rigged cargo on people over the weekend with Boba Gurry. That was pretty fun. Except for Nian Num, who just removes it and laughs.
It's like, oh, you stressed me. Did you think I care?
Yeah, it was bad. I could have done a one forward and done it and then not had him remove it, and then he would have K-turned over it and would have racked up two stress, right? Because, yeah.
Yep.
And then missed it, and I would have gotten him. And I was like, no, I'll do the hard one because, like, I'll get a shot at Poe. That shot, I did take all three shields off of Poe because I was running trick shot as he turned away from me over the debris. But Nian threw four dice into Boba, and Boba blanked out. And so I was like, was that worth it? It was not.
What did it cost?
Everything. What did it cost? Everything. I flew Boba so poorly in that tournament. But it was really fun. Anyways, I'm sorry. I love the spare parts canister talk for the I-6s, because I do think that, you know, or at least I was hoping it would give them an edge over non-initiative-giving pilots. But to no avail.
The other one list I want to talk about is a ship that we've danced around it, but we've never really dug into it, and that's the Kirax, the Cartel Marauder, which had its, I will say, 2.0 coming out party this weekend. I just had that up in front of me, and it's gone.
It's the number one list in before Switch,
yeah.
Or after.
So this list is super gross. There was a Mux list that also won our tournament yesterday.
Very strong.
Oh my god, I thought it was his Torkoal Mux's ability, right, making someone zero at range 1 to 2. Yeah, that was a bubble effect in 1.0. In 2.0, it's just anyone in arc.
It's
the front arc.
It's realistically half your fucking freaking base. Like, because if you're running Mux, you're running the Crow. And by the way, how more wrong could we be? Not only does he take the Moldy Crow, not only does he bring scum, but he brings three Kirage fighters. Like, why don't they just tell us, why doesn't Mike just go on every podcast in the known world and go, hey, all of you who talk about X-Wing every week, you know absolutely nothing.
Do you think it caught me?
We actually did touch on this, and we said at 38 points, it's getting to the point where you look strongly at it.
Yeah.
We did that. You know, he just took the leap of faith.
It's the same. It's why Mux was strong in first edition, and I mean it was more easily, you know, to get I don't know, was it more easily to get out of that, right, out of the bubble range, because now there's less maneuverability in 2.0.
It wasn't. I mean, he was a bastard in 1E as well. There's no getting around it. He was a bastard. I do gotta say that I suspect that where I didn't see him play, I saw him play one part of one game with this. He does. First of all, he does have the only competition for Finn for the 30-point best ship in the game, which is Captain Seaver.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that the games he lost were probably because people were able to take Mux off the board before Mux could have an effect. And I think that's sort of the weakness of it. Like, Scum was so strong in 1E that you could take Mux off the board and it kind of stuck, but you weren't, it wasn't such a vital part of your list for the most part. This, if
right.
he loses Mux, he's basically getting a ship and it killed every round.
See, that was the opinion of a lot of people during the game of his that was streamed, which was against, I don't remember if it was Carson, but it was another Anakin Obi-Wan Rick list. And the fact of the matter is cartels can get out of the way. Between that white one hard that nobody ever seems to remember they have and a two talon, they're very good at blocking. If you know someone is going to chase you, he's very good about scattering them to cover each other in the moment. And then as soon as you let Seabor go, like as soon as you're not in his arc, all of a sudden your mods just start vanishing. And then you're rolling just dice and praying to the gods that you don't roll poorly. The Courage is dope. And it's unique. It's uniquely available, possible for that ship to outfly things at a higher initiative than it, as long as there's more than one. Like, let's be perfectly clear. Todd was one dial away from knocking out one of the two Anakin Obi-Wan Rick lists. Like, if he had made one different dial, and he would have had a range one modified shot on a two-hull Anakin, who was also staring down two other Kirajas. Chat went nuts when he missed it. But Mike Doyle had a chance at running through this event probably undefeated. He was very close.
I mean, he did on the first day, didn't he? He was
yeah,
top seed.
But I mean the whole thing.
Right, catching people off guard. And that's the other thing too, right? And you touched on upon this, Jeff. The only way to really kill Mux is to pull a Rorschach on him, right? Like, you know, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me, right? You can make me zero, but you're the only one shooting me, right? Yeah. And I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do when you've got, you know, hard one barrel roll ships, right? That instead of shooting can block you. And then next turn with those Talon rolls or those hard ones
yeah.
have shots on you. And if Mux survives, then Mux is like, okay, we're good, right? Turn the arc.
Yeah. I love this list. I think this is probably the actual best overall list at the event in terms of what it seeks to accomplish, the tools it has to do so, and value, like the value it gets out of on a point by point basis. This is the best list at the event.
Yeah, I mean the weakness of this list is not what isn't something that should be a weakness, but it's the weakness of the list is that it's going to be outpsed. It's going to be out and knitted.
Yeah, you've got to pick your correct Torkoal. Target with Torkoal, and you got to hope that the dice go in your favor. I mean, obviously Torkoal's coming in with multiple focus tokens, right? But he is the linchpin, right? And it's very similar to the TIE Swarm, right? If Howlrunner dies, you know, they have abilities that can kind of help keep them afloat, obviously. And this list very much less so once, right. Mux is gone.
I don't think so. I think Mux is just there to get one of the... If you're playing against somebody with more than one, you know, high initiative, really squirmy pilot, I think Mux is there to get rid of one of them. And after, if you can do that, then you've gotten what you need out of Mux. And then you can just win by being more maneuverable chassis than the other guy.
Well, keep in mind.
Right. You pull a Lebowski Thor and just kind of lay on them.
Keep in mind.
Right, under the pressure.
We don't want to talk about everybody flies a perfect game. But you do, if you're going to delete an important expensive ship like Wedge or like Vader or like Anakin or whatever by means of Torkoal and Cartel Marauder, you do have to get all of those arcs on a squirrely ship, right? And I think I think it's to Mike's credit that he did so well because he was clearly able to do that. I don't think that that's commonly going to be an easy thing to do, because if you only if you take Wedge down to zero, but you've only got one shot on him, you're not going to end Wedge, and he's going to do his thing, and then you know it starts all over again. You've got to take advantage of taking him to zero and end him. And for that,
But again, you know, we come back to the fact that the Marauders have something that people don't realize they have, which is a white one hard. And being able to do that makes it extremely hard to angle around them.
Mux, the one thing I will say, and this is true for better players, at least in the past with the first edition, the Hawks from first edition, all the named ones, had a reputation for you would fly up against them once in any number of different lists, various lists, and you would lose to them. And in the replayment of that game, if you were to come back knowing what you knew, knowing what you learned from the last game,
yes,
you would beat them. And once you figured it out, it was like, you know, it was 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And that was, you know, we didn't really see them more or less until the end with a tiny mind link and whatever. But I'm wondering if the Crows in second edition, especially the Scum ones, will have this longer lasting effect, right? They will continue to be certainly playable and relevant in competition after people learn kind of how to deal with them. And maybe the fact that their arcs are almost 180, or at least for Mux's ability, will we see him outpace Palov? I kind of think we will, moving forward. Even though he's more expensive than Palov.
You're mostly right. I think that when you've got Torkoal or you've got Palov, and you're taken by surprise by them, either because you've forgotten that they're good and annoying, or you've never really run into them or whatever, you lose. If you're not taken by surprise, you know how to approach them. The problem is that in 1E, when that happened, the ship was worth 25 points.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean. Here, the ship is worth as much as Wedge. That's, you know, it's like, not only am I taking out a ship that's really giving me a hard time right up the pooper, I'm getting 55 points for it. And I think that's going to make it, I think that's going to slow down people trying to adopt this on a widespread basis.
It's perfectly possible. I just hope that that people realize how good of a deal that Kirage is. And we start seeing more of them, because if people realize how good those are, you know, who knows what effect that's going to have on the way lists are built as far as overall pilot skill. Because these guys are almost immune to getting two tapped. Between six hole and two evade, you have to be at range one of them, and you have to roll perfect and then follow it up with something.
Yeah, and for those who are interested in it, I can't recommend anything that is both more fun and better practice than five of these guys with dead man switches. It's absolutely hilarious, and it's really excellent practice, because of course you don't want your dead man switch to get your own ships. So you learn very quickly what the dial is and what it can do.
Very in a fun process.
Do we finally have to talk about Matthew Carey's list in real detail? Or have, I mean, we did talk about it earlier, but since we're kind of starting to get into the nitty gritty here.
It's raw, untamed. It's pretty powerful.
It's okay. The concussion missiles were a mystery to me until I realized that he's just trying to get a TIE Inquisitor, a tap, a three die attack. Whoop-de-doo, perfect, makes perfect sense. Is Jendin something that probably Imperial players are overlooking more often than not?
In a lot of extended tournaments, I've seen him used. I mean, I think the Hatchet Man really put Jendin is the Targalok guy, right?
So, with
the Hatchet Man really put Jendin on the map, I think, and people are now learning, oh, I can do this, I can do that.
I also think that at the Coruscant Invitational, when 2.0 first came out, wasn't D running yes. Jenden with the bombers?
No, no.
Well, maybe it wasn't Jenden, but or if it was, yeah. So he's kind of been
proton bombers actually were a thing for a while.
Right, right. So yeah, I definitely feel like Jenden is sort of a sleeper, and maybe people don't look at him because they do hyperspace yeah. so much. I know that when this tournament that I went to yesterday was extended, and I am still struggling to like look at stuff and be like, oh my god, it's extended. I have everything. Wait, what do I build, right? What do I use because it's extended, right? Like I want to use stuff that I don't have access to, and I even myself overlooked Jenden.
Can I run down the list real quick for our
for a lot of Imperial
lists? It's such an odd list that we never see.
Sure. Do you guys want me to walk through it? I'm looking at it right now.
Go for it.
I mean, I know we all are. Sure. So we start with the Grand Inquisitor. He has Sense, Concussion Missiles, and Fire Control. Then we have Jenden, completely naked, bum flap down and all. We've got the Inquisitor, an Inquisitor, with Concussion Missiles, Fire Control, and another Inquisitor, Concussion, and Fire Control.
Now, I immediately have one question. Why does Jenden not have a hull upgrade?
I'm wondering, for the bid, the Inquisitor is 5, right? Is it true? Maybe it makes the job easier? If you give them the initiative, right, you know where they're going to be, so the Inquisitor can get into position.
That's an 11 hit point shuttle is a really strong ship. That's a weird thing to leave on the table for one I-5 who already has Sense. But anyway, he did very, very well. So, you know, I just think the concussion missiles make this list. And I think that's pretty genius. This is very similar to what I was talking about with the Cartel Marauders with Dead Man Switch. You need to know your dial and know what you can do because if you've got damage cards on you, which granted, with only 2 hull, they're not likely to have damage cards on them, but you don't want to be caught in the bubble of a concussion missile.
And it's a 3-use thing, which is about probably as many as you need over the course of a full game.
Correct.
You know, so you're not getting as many total dice out of something like cluster missiles, maybe, and it's not as powerful, it's not guaranteed damage like a homing missile, but, you know, that could be the difference a lot of times between you bouncing off of a 2 or 3 die ship and you doing damage.
Yeah, and it is going to be double modified.
On them, yeah.
So you know, yep. Those are very strong little 43-point ships, man.
Well, that's fair. But Drew has been pining about this for about 3 weeks now, so we're finally going to do it. A day late and a dollar. Well, many days late and many dollars short. We are finally going to cover the Fantasy Flight floor rules. Drew, go ahead and start us off with story time.
Oh my goodness, man. The Legion community was up in arms about this just because people wanted to know. And I am happy to be the one to be like, I am so happy that we have floor rules. I know that there are sections of the document, the 18-page document, that are not particularly worded very well, nor possibly even correctly. But I have never been more happy, even when players on stream for X-Wing, you know, forget to engage with a ship, leave a critical token on there, forget about the crit, and then the judge comes over and goes, hey, right, we're going to play as is, but both of you are going to get a warning for not cleaning up the game state, right? Like, you have gone out of line in this. And we saw both casually and also, you know, as two incredibly smart people coming together to play X-Wing, right? Like, in a competitive match. But in Legion, oh my god, it was used to great effect. There were a few aggressive players, and 2 people were disqualified from the tournament due to their aggressive behavior. And I don't know if they were fairly well known in the community, but it was just...
Was this
at Gen Con, yes. But I wanted to bring it up because it sort of... it sort of shows that, you know, we always like to toot in all of the – in Armada, in X-Wing, and now in Legion too. You know, we have the best community of players, right? You know, they're nice. We're fun-loving. We don't – it is so rare to see aggression. And I mean, yes and no, right? You know, it – there's obviously a fine line between, you know,
go ahead, Drew.
I'm sorry. That's a whole rabbit hole we could go down. But at the end of the day, when players are being aggressive with each other, there were warnings given. There was someone who got a DQ, someone who got a match loss, and the person who went on to the next round from that set of players eventually received a disqualification along with their opponent. And I don't know the specifics about it. I don't know if it was worth it, right? Or if it was the right thing to do for those players. But I am happy to see that, you know, when that sort of aggression is shown at an event of this caliber, that the judges and everyone is there with the documents and like, hey, man, right? We said you can't do this. You have done this, right?
What kind of aggression are we talking about? I mean, the worst that I've ever seen in X-Wing is people have thrown dice, which is really uncomfortable, but
that's tame.
It's tame. It's not at somebody, sure. So it's like
I have seen and heard, and I quote, "I will get arrested if you try to stop me from taking this turn."
What? Oh my god!
Now he was joking, but he also wasn't. And this was an individual with whom you want no smoke.
Oh man. So that actually does bring up, I'll give you guys
Andrew,
a little
I will tell you who it was after the show.
Okay. Nice. Oh, great. I so want to know. So there was a player who was constantly calling a judge over for like everything that their opponent would do. And this did spark aggression, right? This does not, I'm forgetting the Marie Kondo word for it. It does not spark joy. It sparked the opposite for their opponent. And that led to the aggression, which got both players disqualified. But of course, for one of the two, it was their second. Their second. Hey, you can't do this anymore, right? And then the other thing too, for this previous game, the very first time it happened, it was sparked from someone. Hey, can you pick up the pace a little bit? Yeah. And that was definitely I'm not fully certain if the first time it was brought up, it was, you know, very nonchalant and like, hey, man, you know, come on. Right. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if it was, you know, hey, you need to, you know, speed it up very quickly in Legion. Usually if one more turn is given in a game, you can tell what's going to happen. And so maybe that is kind of where that the aggression sparked from, because the person who is being asked to speed up knew that if there was another turn, right, they would have won or they would have lost. But yeah, so there was the first aggression in the first game was asking a player to pick up their pace. And then the second mark on both players was calling a judge over for literally every single thing that they were doing. Or everything
were
they
these two players from history or
I don't know. I don't think so. I have heard that they were known for supposedly being hot-headed, but not like, I don't know, not as badly as it happened at Gen Con.
It seems like deliberate harassment or provocation.
Yeah, that sounds like trolling.
Yeah, exactly.
But
interesting.
Exactly.
We weren't there, so
right. No, that's all good. I'm trying to give as much information that I know personally, but what I took from that I enjoyed was the fact that the document was used, and it sounds like for the most part it was used effectively.
I heard another instance of the document being used for something that I've argued with people about in the past. You cannot actually missing shooting with a ship. It's not a matter of a missed trigger. It's not a matter of a missed opportunity, because a ship has to engage. It must engage. If a ship must engage, then obviously the only way you can choose not to shoot with it is to say, I'm not going to shoot with the
ship.
Yeah,
right.
And that was actually used at Gen Con, according to a story that I heard.
I watched that on stream.
Yeah. So, So I like that a lot because it's very clear. Look, nobody's going to get an advantage by hurrying somebody along through the initiative order. Intentionally or accidentally, it can just as easily happen accidentally, and you're not going to get an advantage from it because ships must engage, and it's right there in 2.3 missed game steps. You have
to engage. And we saw that it was 2-point penalty given to both players in forgetting the game state. Not maybe in that specific instance, but if you are a player who notices your opponent forgot to shoot with one of their ships, and then the other person catches it, that would result in a penalty for both of you, which, you know, obviously may seem unfair, but at the same time, that means that one of, you know, if you noticed it and you let it pass, right, do you deserve the penalty for not playing the game? I think so, yeah.
So let's talk about, since we mentioned penalty points, we'll start working our way through the listing here. There are new, so that they've listed four different types of penalties: warnings, game losses, match losses, and disqualifications. You can be issued three kinds of warnings: a normal one-pointer, which is, and I quote, a simple error in deck list or unintentional slow play; hard warnings, repeat infractions, or a significant gameplay disruption, or an intermediate event disruption. So people like me who probably have penchants for losing their temper, that one's for you. And then the severe warnings are apparently, like Drew mentioned, where it turns into just out-and-out hostility, or Jeff, watch out for this one, spouting unnecessary profanity. The 2 points that those two guys caught are no bullshit. That's 40%. Almost any other penalty, if you catch one worse than that, you're just gone. Because it's 5 or more penalty points to get tossed from a competitive event. If you get a hard warning and the situation escalates, you might as well just walk because you're going to get DQ'd.
Right. Or you stop. You stop. You're like, all right, you say what you're going to say, and I'll just sit here and you got to take it, right?
At certain points, you got to know to let that to let it go, which is something I need to work on. We'll skip. Match loss and game loss are self-explanatory. They do.
I know that the joke's been made several times, but I genuinely want to know what necessary profanity is.
Yeah, that's true. I would like to know. You know what it sounds like? It sounds like the old Hollywood. What was the ratings board back in the day, Jeff? I know you know this.
What's that?
The old Hollywood code. Oh my God!
That's kind of ringing bells for me. I learned this in a film.
Yeah,
school.
I should know this.
But I have another story about that. Right, unnecessary profanity. At a tournament a couple years ago, we had a guy who he wasn't rolling dice, his ships weren't doing anything and he was losing, right? He was rolling blanks both on attack and evade, and he had an outburst where he screamed and it stopped the entire tournament, right? There's about 12 or 16 of us, you know, people from Sacramento came down and we all kind of stopped and just kind of watched him for about 30 seconds. He went off on a tangent, a small tangent about dice. And he grabbed a chair and he slid it across the room. Now that, you know, the chair sliding may have been a little too much, but at the end of the day, I do feel like, you know, if you are frustrated with your outcome or your dice, that to me is the unnecessary profanity.
It's the Hayes production code. I finally found it.
But I'm not asking about unnecessary. I'm asking when is it necessary?
More often than you'd think, speaking from experience. One F bomb, two F bombs, three F bombs,
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who does not always react well to, you know, moments of dice turning on me, I think that a certain amount of salt should be allowed under tournament regulations.
I have salt packets for you, Vince, the next tournament we go to.
Any salt packets?
Instead of, Yep, instead of screaming the profanity, you can just shake it on your ship.
Drew.
Keep it in the bag. Drew. It's amazing.
Salt packets don't even have no effect on me anymore.
Oh man, and they're not FFG tokens, so you can't use them either.
The amount of salt I possess is unknown in the mortal realms.
That salt just doesn't do anything.
But it's known on Kessel.
Even then, you could shutter the Kessel mines and just mine me.
What Kessel was spice? Salt is great, right? I think that in terms of being upset with variance in the game, the line is probably don't take it out on your opponent and don't do anything excessive physically. I personally think throwing your dice is excessive. I just think that's come on.
Oh my god, throwing game tokens and stuff at your opponent. That is like,
whoa!
I'm so surprised. I'm so surprised that that wasn't in there. I have seen people pick up their opponent's asteroid. Sorry, I'm eating dinner. And literally like skip them like rocks across the table into their opponent because they are so upset with what happened. And I'm ashamed to see that at a tournament. Like, 100%.
I don't think that that's even points. I think that's a DQ. If you are aggressively being physical toward your opponent, that should be a DQ.
So I'll go story time now. This is me in my younger days. There was and somehow I ended up winning this game, by the way, which makes me feel even worse about it. I played a game against this game of 40K many years ago where just the first three turns, my dice were so abysmally bad that the first time it happened, I was like, oh, it's going to be one of them days. The second turn, I ended my turn. I sat down in the chair. I said, hey, dude, just give me 2 minutes. The third turn, it happened again. I dropped my tape measure on the table. I threw my dice and I just fell backwards in a Christ fall, looked up in the air, and just yelled, what the fuck, as loud as humanly possible.
Damn.
Under this code, I would have been ejected at light speed.
But they would have let you stay if you had screamed, you maniacs, you killed it!
Well, the other one I could have gone with is, what's the one from Planet of the Apes?
Wasn't that it? When
you blew it.
You blew it up. You blew it up.
But I
don't think you would. I don't think you'd be ejected under this code, Vince. Seriously, I think that you'd get points, but not eject. Not ejected.
Okay.
Which I don't think you would be ejected, by the way.
Because there's bad dice, and then there's is this really happening right now? And it's different in X-Wing just because the volume of dice is lower. So at least it feels like it. Like I don't normally tilt on X-Wing anymore, but if you roll 20, 30, 40 dice and like five of them come up a three or better, I mean, words fail.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I do agree with Jeff. There's profanity, but at the same time, you know, you're not being aggressive towards your opponent, right? Unless you threw the dice at him.
No.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I think they'd just be like, hey, man, right? Keep that internal monologue, right? Like, you know.
Yeah. And forge that narrative inside your head.
Stick it there, GW. But there is something else I want to talk about too, which is the collusion and the bribery.
Oh boy!
I know it's a rabbit hole, right? Like, but I want to ask you guys, you know,
Wait, Drew.
The card game players were talking like, okay, so I sit down across from my opponent, I can't ask them what their score is, right? Are you X one?
Of course you can.
Yeah,
open information.
But you know, is that considered collusion, right? Because there's so many people in X-Wing that I've played who, especially people walking by, right? And obviously, I haven't gone to any huge events, and they don't do this at huge events. But in smaller events, you know, people come up and are like, oh, yeah, man, if he gets half on that guy, you know, you got it, right? Or like, you know, I go into a game, and I've had someone tell me, hey, man, his list is pretty good, but if you get half on this dude and you keep this guy alive, you're good. And I'm like, isn't that – that is.
No, that's not collusion. That's site gaming.
No? Huh.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do
about
that. Yeah,
it's also – there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's – let me back that up. It's wrong for a third party to come over mid-game and start commenting. Like, that's real side gaming, and that's shitty. But
I think that's what they're in the document. That's what that is.
Okay.
But no, continue. Sorry.
But I mean, between rounds, if some guy goes, hey, dude, I know the guy you're going to play and, you know, watch your ass. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay.
That's just like, it's just like having a coach. As long as he's not messing with you, as long as he's not giving you advice or passing you signals or anything during the game.
You just turn to those people and you give them your best Ace Ventura impression. I can do it, coach. Exactly. Put me in.
So, by the way, Drew, I gave Vince earlier this week, I gave him a crash course in the Roanoke Ace.
Speaking of collusion, that was an interesting story.
What happened?
The Roanoke Ace?
should I know it?
4 intentional draws that ended the tournament, effectively ended the tournament after 5 rounds when it was supposed to be a 6-round tournament. A couple of years ago.
Was that at Hoff?
No, it was at Nova.
Nova. That's right. No, I remember they did that in protest of Hoff. I remember that.
No, it wasn't a protest thing. This was the top 8 people realized that if they intentionally drew, which was allowed under the current rules,
right,
bizarrely,
right,
then they didn't even need to play the 6th round, then all 8 would advance to the cut.
Yep, yep. And so, now, I do feel the like they didn't...
Go ahead.
No, I'm so sorry. I always cut you off, man. If you want to finish, my apologies. Please do.
Well, basically, it just ended the tournament a round early for the 9th or 28th player or 24th player. There was no point in them playing if they weren't just in it to play the game, because they were shut out by the top 8 players through what would now not be allowed, but was allowed then, was completely under the rules then, if completely unethical.
Right, right.
But, yeah. So I told Vince about it. He was flabbergasted.
I've never heard of that. There are always rumors in other games that, oh man, these two guys from the same team played each other, and it's real interesting how. And the guys who say that it happens in 40K, they're right. I'm sure it happens. I know I've seen it in Armada, but to have 8 guys all freeze out the rest of the event, and to try to say that, well, we earned the right not to play. No, you didn't.
Exactly.
Like, the amount of... There's a phrase I use called integrity of events. And for me, that basically means that as paying customers, everyone who shows up is allowed to expect that the event they are playing in will be run according to the rules, but also in a way that doesn't screw them unnecessarily. Like, they have the right to expect that a tournament is run as fairly and as completely according to the rules as possible. And this is just a joke. Like, the fact that that was even in people's minds is a black mark on all of X-Wing, regardless of how the community as a whole reacted to it. That shouldn't even have been a thought.
Well, maybe this is also why you haven't heard of it. Obviously, you know, the times back then were different. I was under fire for that at Hoth because my opponent and I, it was mentioned to us that we could collude to continue into the top cut. And me as a person, I was like, no, I want to play the game. And
I remember that.
And my opponent also was like, I want to play now, because if I can knock you out here, I don't want to see you in the cut, right? Like, I don't want to play you again, yeah. Right? I mean, I do feel like, especially at Nova, it really, you know, even if it didn't send FFG a message, or they didn't intend to send FFG a message, I think it did.
Oh, it definitely did. It split the community, just ripped the community. I don't know what the proportions were, but fairly close to in half.
Right, pretty close to a second asshole.
Yeah, and it was, and FFG was just like, wow, this looks really, really bad. We've made a mistake here, and they got rid of it. Now, people aren't super happy with what replaced it, which is Final Salvo and so forth. But the thing about it is that the issue wasn't having draws in X-Wing. Draws in X-Wing are fine. The issue was having intentional draws that could freeze out the rest of the field.
Yeah, that means other people don't get to play.
For me, it's the refusal to play. It's the abusing a stupid rule to avoid risk is what bothers me.
Yeah.
And back then, too. I mean,
not only do you avoid risk, but you avoid risk by taking opportunity from 16 other players.
Correct.
It isn't like you can avoid risk. Like the first two players, nobody cares that they intentionally drew, really, because they were in regardless. Right? It's just that when it cascaded down the line, they're not in the tournament unless they do this. They're basically stepping on the faces of the people below them to ensure that they're in the tournament. And that was the problem. But it's no longer – the reason that I bring it up is that under this document, that's not going to happen. It can't happen. I like the things on collusion. I do think that Drew's questions illustrate a lot of probable misunderstanding about what collusion is and discussion and things like that. But I think in general they've got it right here.
Should we talk about slow playing?
Sure.
So, I don't think anyone at the tournament at Gen Con, actually, I don't know about you guys, I didn't hear about anyone who got penalized for slow playing.
There were warnings handed out, apparently. I never heard names, but apparently there were several warnings handed out for people taking too long. But apparently they were both – apparently the decision they came to was that they would give both guys a warning.
The thing about it is that this document draws a clear distinction between slow play and stalling.
Yeah.
And the distinction is intentional based. If you're stalling, you're actually trying to gain an advantage in play by removing opportunity from your opponent.
Yes.
Familiar sounds like just what we were talking about.
Yep.
And that's a much more serious offense under this document.
Yeah. The first slow play is essentially you're just going to get a word from the judge, you know, I need you to play more quickly. Then you get issued a normal warning, and then after repeat offenses you'll be given a game loss. And apparently that's as far as it goes.
Well, no, because it goes in deeper down below, right? With like, you know, because at that point, you're sitting on, what, four warnings, right? So, like, I mean, you know.
Yeah, one more warning and you're disqualified.
One more strike and you're out, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, in all the stream games that I watched, and I watched quite a few stream games, I didn't have a pace of play problem one time.
No, I didn't either.
Not a single time in all the games I watched. In fact, it really seemed to me like people were conscious about it in a way that I haven't noticed before, but of course that could be perception, you know, as opposed to reality.
Just because we mentioned the difference between slow playing and stalling, and that they finally introduced kind of a spirit of the game rules. They've introduced spirit of the game rules. Listen to this. Stalling not only sours the experience for the offender's opponent, but can also throw off the timing and integrity of the tournament as a whole. This is what I mean when I talk about integrity of event. one player screwing everyone else does have an effect on everyone else's games, because that's how you get matchups that you should not have gotten. And that's that kind of thing can snowball and can disrupt and in a lot of ways ruin the outcome of an otherwise completely legitimate event.
Hard to do it like that, but yes, I mean, we've seen it. It's happened, right?
Yeah. We would talk about aggressive behavior, but I think we
touched down upon that.
Yeah, two of these are basically trolling. Shouting, you know, pulling a chair out from another person, causing them to fall to the ground. So
what the hell is that? Are we in third grade?
That's what I was going to say. Like, that's some childish shit.
Dude, the first thing I thought of was people sit when they play X-Wing.
Yeah. I mean, those of us that are old sometimes sit when we play X-Wing just to get
yeah, even the tall guys got to sit too. I got to sit too occasionally.
Yeah, especially the tall guys.
Yep.
And then they provide this nice handy dandy appendix with all of the, you know, infractions, all of the penalties, and then quote unquote things to keep in mind, which is essentially, I guess, you know, context clues for when you're going to get one or what to look for.
I do want to point out that they are very careful here to reserve a tremendous amount of power, as they should, for judge and marshal discretion.
Yeah. So yep.
It isn't a matter of if this happens, you are getting a warning or you are being disqualified. There is room for the judge or marshal to have discretion on this, and there needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, that you can't, somebody comes to Gen Con and flies, you know, 700 miles to get to Gen Con, and they accidentally have grabbed their third party dice, and they've been playing with their third party dice for a couple of games, right? Come on, you end their Gen Con for that? I hope not.
Yeah. Right.
Or I think it happened, actually. I heard about that. Someone grabbed someone else's dial on accident.
Yes.
That was another. Yeah.
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 But I do agree with Jeff that I'm glad they're not going full dread, you know, I am the law. Where it's like every judge is dread and every single infraction is the penalty is death.
Oh, I really want to find helmets now. Dread helmets for the judges. That would be so awesome! Because you can't see the eyes, so they can just walk up to a table and just stand there.
And it's, and just as soon as they see somebody, they pick up the model, the judgment is death. And they just cross the build.
The guy leans over to pick up his dice and the hand goes out and like on the chest, right? No, right? Like,
slow play, 5 years, ISO cubes.
Wow.
I thought you were going to say a thousand years to run the Sarlacc
pit. I'm an absolutely massive Judge Dredd fanboy, by the way.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so funny. We got to do something like that. I'll talk to my judge guys. I'll talk to Wade. We'll make it happen. He's not. Oh, man.
But all right. Anything else out of this, out of the floor rules that, you know, that inspire any more funny stories?
No, I've got some sad stories, but we went over enough of those. I'm just happy where the game is now and moving forward. Very quickly, never mind. I'll save that to the end.
So, Drew, I don't know if this is appropriate for recording, but I'm going to say it anyway. Vince and I had a very brief conversation, and we're fairly certain we're doing Gen Con next year. And if we do it, I'll definitely be Airbnb-ing. And a decision will need to be made by like February, I think, in order to get a good Airbnb. So if you're interested, do the wide world of Wargaming X-Wing trip to Gen Con.
And we can write it off.
I mean, if we can write it off, I wouldn't mind it, but I gotta talk to Sherry because we're doing our we're going on our honeymoon, Taiwan for 2 weeks. Not Taiwan. We will be touching base in Taiwan to see her family. We'll also be going to Japan for 2 weeks.
Sherry doesn't consider Indianapolis to be a honeymoon. I don't.
She doesn't, I mean, there's no, I cannot for the life of me, even giving her my non-working pancreas, could get her to go to Gen Con and go to any of these larger events. You know, we love playing games,
Sherry's never
but it's
Gen
just,
Con?
She's never been to any big event. I was trying to get her to go to Worlds. I wanted to propose to her at Worlds and it just wasn't in the cards. I couldn't get her to say yes for anything.
Look. Sherry, screw Gen Con X-Wing. Just go to Gen Con for Gen Con. You will have a huge amount of fun and just see some amazing crowds of people doing amazing things. You should go, in all seriousness. Go to Gen Con. Just don't, if you don't want to play X-Wing, don't play X-Wing.
Right. We got to do a bigger tournament where she'll actually be here, and then you guys can talk her into it, because I can't. I have no say in my queen. So,
well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. And hopefully next week when we come back, we'll have a couple of hyperspace trials and the full lists from Gen Con 2019 to analyze. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. Let's go ahead and sign out.
Thank you, guys.
Y'all have a good week.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.